had a grand total of 66 tonight. Good net. Appreciate each and every one of you out there in radio land that checked in with me tonight. Y'all come back again tomorrow night, and Mr. Matt, as far as I know, will be calling WG4MC. So y'all come back and give him a good dose of Rider's Cramp. This is KI4DOS, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. With our thanks for all those folks checked in with us tonight. We will now return the repeater to normal amateur use. 73, good night, God bless. This is KI4DOS, clear.
DTY KO4NUE.
4DTY KO4NUE. What's up, Ben?
Not much. How you doing?
Yes, pretty good. My eyes are a little crossed, but other than that, I'm doing good. How about you?
Not too bad. Are they crossed because you're tired or what?
Spent the day with my cousin today, and he wore me out.
I hear that. Actually, I talked to Patrick probably around 6, and he said y'all had lunch together.
Me and Chris and Patrick went to Five Guys there in Easley, and we had a ball. We got to laughing. It got a little bit loud there for a little bit, but we had a pretty good time, and me and Chris got to see Patrick's tool truck. And I'm gonna tell you, that's a sight to see. That's a beautiful truck, boy. I mean, just beautiful.
Well, I'm glad y'all got to do lunch. I was really happy that y'all got to connect like that. I think that was good. But yeah, that truck is gorgeous. We were gonna go to one of the Greer meeting one night. He let me in there, and I saw it, and I was like, dang, this is nice. I tell you what, I'd live in that thing.
He let me get up in the front seat and sit in the seat for a little bit, and I don't know, I just like those big trucks, you know, and just it just kind of said, come on, let's go for a ride, you know. I mean, it's got the little seat on it with the cushion that moves up and down, shock absorber on it, and I mean, the dash is all laid out nice. I mean, it's a sweet ride. And, boy, it sure does sound good, too.
KI4DOS. As many millions of miles as I've had in them things, you wouldn't want to live in one, I guarantee you. And one cool thing about Patrick's, it's an automatic. He don't have the shifter down there, and he don't have, 13 over or something like that, or 15. That's the fun of driving a truck, changing all the gears.
I probably wouldn't enjoy it, but that is a nice, let me make sure I have this. A nice ride, but yeah, but I used to drive a lot growing up. I didn't drive a semi, but I drove a 30-foot trailer. And I tell you what, it was getting towards the end where I didn't enjoy it anymore. But ironically enough, my brother just bought a Peterbilt, I think, semi-truck, and he's off driving.
4NUE, let me make sure I got it. Gary, I had a military CDL at one time. We had some transfer truck heavy haulers that were called M916s, and they had air over hydraulic shifter in them. It had spools in it. You didn't change gears. You just flipped the lever up to the gear, and then you hear all this air valve actuation going on up underneath the truck where air would shift the hydraulics on the transmissions to make it shift. And I spent a fair amount of time in those. But you're right, there's nothing like a straight drive on a big truck like that, especially one that's got the two-speed axle on it. We used to have old dump truck Dad bought from her selling these corporation that had a, I think it was an F600 or something like that, and it had a two-speed axle, a big red button on the gear shift. And he'd flip that thing in between high and low range. He never would let me drive it. He's afraid I was going to tear the two-speed out of it, but I drove it here on the farm and low speed. But, you know, you're right. Ain't nothing like a straight drive.
Well, I've got too many miles in them there, Chad, Daniel. I've run east to west, top to bottom, and, well, I've been rode hard and put up with too many times. But, Chad, what you need to get in is an old Mac with a Maxidyne twin stick transmission where you had to reach through the steering wheel to grab a hold of one stick while your other hand was on the other stick, and you kind of drove with your belly and your forearm. That sounds kind of strange, but you had to move one stick forward or backwards while you were changing the other one from you know, like the second, third, or fourth position. And if you ever missed a gear, hold on, because if you get your arm between those two shifters, it'll break your arm.
Let me make sure I got this. Just picture that in my mind. And I'm not seeing me being able coordinated enough to do that. 2 years ago, me and Chris bought a bulldozer. I don't know, it was probably 2-3 miles from the farm. They'd been in a field for years, and we got the thing running and drove it over to where Chris's place is. And I can't drive the thing. Gear shifters and foot pedals and laterals and this, that, and the other. I cannot drive it, but Chris can get on that son of a gun, and he can just drive it like you wouldn't believe. And it's just like he's just made for it. I get so frustrated when I get on the thing. I get the levers mixed up, and he just laughs at me, you know. But I just never was coordinated like that, I guess. It just too many levers.
Give it a minute. Let Daniel come back in there. I worked for a fella that bought a John Deere. Oh, gosh, I can't remember, a D9 or something like that, bulldozer. And my brother talked to him. He wanted some grading work done on his driveway, and he wanted me to have some trees he wanted to see about. And so he got in touch with me and my boss man, and the boss man told him, he said, yeah, I says, y'all can use it. Well, the bad part was trying to transport the silly things. We didn't have a trailer that was really heavy enough to move it. We got it moved from where it was located in Greenville up to Nakersville. And I went up there, and brother got on it. And brother was a truck driver, too. And he got on it. He thought, hey, well, I can do this, you know. He starts in there, and he raises the blade up about 6 or 8 inches off the ground, and he goes towards a pine tree that's over probably, I don't know, it's probably 8 or 10 inches around the base. He hits that thing and likes to come flying out of the seat. He looks at me and he says, this bulldozer ain't no good. It won't push the pine tree over. I said, brother, raise the blade up a little bit. And I said, if that don't work, you need to dig out around the front side of it, or the back side, or all the way around it. You know, to loosen the dirt up. And he said, you do it. And I said, okay. So I got on it, raised the blade up as high as it'd go, and I eased up to that tree and pushed it right over. And he got so mad at me, I thought he was going to spit toothpicks at me.
To Alice Chalmers, straight blades. One of them had a blade, the other one didn't. It was just a pulling tractor. Old things. I don't know what years they were, but one of them run, one of them didn't. And he bought it, cleared the lot out here where the trailer is at the end of the driveway. And pushed a big old pile of brush pile up. Took him 2 or 3 days to push it up. And I guess it's, I don't know, probably 8-10 feet tall, maybe a little higher. And was getting ready to burn it. So he's going to drive it bulldozer across the top of it and pack everything down. And got up on the top of the thing, and the bulldozer tipped when it gets past its fulcrum point, I guess. And had a shield on it in front of the levers and all. And when it tipped on over, it pushed his face right into that shield, and his bottom teeth come through right under his bottom lip and just busted his lip. I mean, it just the lip pooched out, chipped one of his teeth, and he never parked. He went over and parked the thing and set the brush pile on fire and sold them the next month, and never got on the thing again. But his hand crank started, and he'd get out there and crank on that thing trying to start it, and sometimes you get it right and sometimes you couldn't. But I never will forget that. It took 1 or 2 stitches in his bottom lip. I mean, just the bottom teeth just come right through, and you know that hurt. That had to have hurt.
Well, that hurts to think about it, Chad. It really does. I don't know where Daniel went, but Daniel, come on back in there, young man. Let me run you off.
Oh, no, you didn't run me off. I was enjoying listening. I didn't have a lot to add to it, so I've never had a lot of opportunities to drive a big equipment, but I always loved it if I could. I remember one time, me and my uncle, who was at the time, were, you know, like maybe 6 years older than I was, and I was 4 or 5, and we kind of lived on a farmland, and me and my uncle were building a go-kart, and when I say we, it was mostly him. I was 4 or 5. I, you know, hung around him, you know, looked up to him. So we were building this go-kart, and we got the motor on and everything, and, you know, we're, you know, doing all these attachments and stuff. So he goes, all right, he's like, I want to crank it, but I need you to get on it. So I got on it, and he went and cranked it up, and it was in stuck. The gas pedal was stuck. Well, I was only 4 years old. I didn't know how to drive. So, that go-kart takes off. I'm talking about it was tearing up some ground. And he's chasing behind me screaming, hit the brake, hit the brake. Well, I had no clue. And I was, my foot was on that gas pedal. And I was hauling. I'm talking about I was hauling. He could not catch me, and I was headed straight for the street, the road, which, I mean, it wasn't terribly busy. We were in back woods area, but basically, I ended up going until I ran into a ditch. We're in Wilmington, so Wilmington, we got some ditches, and I ran into that ditch, and my face and chest hit that steering wheel, knocked the air out of me.
Yes, KI4DOS. Yes, there are some deep ditches down there in and around Wilmington. I almost dropped a trailer off in one of those. I had to pull around back behind a place of business, and they had one of them big old ditches back there, and they didn't have enough room. And I got close, and the outside tire on the trailer were in midair. The ones that were on the inside were still on the dirt, or what was left of it. So I got it in there, and then once I got started out, I shortened the trailer up, and I was able to get out of there a lot easier. But that can be a problem. Go ahead and pick it up there, Chris, KI4DOS.
Party, Jerry. What do you think about the 18 speed?
Carry you out unless you're on a flat piece of ground like a desert.
Got behind that last truck I drove was an 18 speed, and you could max out your weight, find the steepest hill to climb, and with that splitter and that high and low, you can climb that hill with no problem. I had about a 76 model Mack with a maxi torque transmission, which is a good transmission, but you get weighted out and start up a hill and your road speed drops quicker than your RPMs. So you basically pick your first gear and gotta climb a hill. At 18 speed, you can split them gears and RPMs catch up. Just go right the steepest hill maxed out on your lever. I thought I was in heaven with that transmission.
Yeah, those are nice transmissions, no doubt. But you got to have that big old motor up there in front of you to go with it. I drove a truck. It was an auto car. I don't even know if they make them things anymore or not. But boy, it was a sweet ride. Had a lot of gears in it. It was a 15 over, and it had the splitter in there, and you just go half a gear, and boy, I tell you what, you can get that thing wound up. But the last truck I drove was a Peterbilt 379. It was a straight 9 speed, and we had 8th and 9th reversed. And so the 9th gear would be up against the dash instead of down between the seats. But you had to be running about 80 or a little better to put it in 9th gear. And we were going across Arizona, and got pulled over and got one of those fast driving awards. It was for 113 miles an hour, and that wasn't maxed out.
That was pretty interesting. I got behind the wheel of a Peter car with one of them double sticks in it one time, and I wasn't about to get that thing on the road when they explained to me what you got to do. So I've only seen them and heard about them, but never had the guts to try one.
It's a mess. Y'all go ahead. I got to jump out of here for a minute. I got to go in here and practice my potty training. KI4DOS, can we clear with the group for a bit?
All right, Chad, so I had a question for you. Kind of want to get your thoughts. I have Yaesu FT2980, which I think you and Chris just got done putting in his trucks or whatever. So I have that, and it used to be my shack rig that I was using. Probably 2 months ago, I went and bought that YTY or TYT 9800, which is supposedly like the Yaesu 8900. Anyways, I think that TYT is 50 watt, where my Yaesu 29 is 80 or 85 watt. And so there lies my question. Let me make sure I still have this. I think it would be wise or beneficial for me to change that 50 watt radio out, even though it is a dual band, which is why I got it, and put that Yaesu, since it's an 80 watt, in the truck. Would I really see any improvement while I'm driving?
Daniel, I'm trying to figure out how I can answer that with my limited knowledge. Let me word it this way. With 2980 and 80 watts. I think there's a lot of factors there. One's going to obviously be an antenna. But the 2980s, Chris and I chose to use those because we considered simplex for part of our use. So we got the radios so that we could possibly try to simplex with one another. And in simplex, you're relying on peer-to-peer and not a repeater sitting up on elevation. So from the simplex side of things, that's kind of why we went with that. I would have to say in certain conditions, I think when you're using a repeater with the radio, that that extra 20 watts probably would not make that big of a difference. Either the repeater's going to hit you or not. You could use that extra wattage, probably gain an extra couple of miles to hit the repeater, I guess. But if you're asking me which one I would put in my truck, it would definitely be the dual bander. And that's just my preference, though. You know, I like options, especially when you travel. So I've got a Kenwood dual bander and a 2980 that I've had in the truck. And it is nice to be able to move through an area on the interstate or something like that and not have a 2-meter repeater anywhere that you can hit, but you've got a full 40 or 70 centimeter machine you can hit. So being able to toggle between those two, in my opinion, that outweighs the extra 20 or 30 watts. But I guess, Daniel, it's going to depend on what you're wanting to do. Let me let this thing drop. Think you're going to need or have a use for some higher wattage for simplex in an emergency or whatever, I would stick with the 2980. The other thing I'll tell you, too, is that it is difficult to navigate a dual bander in a vehicle if you don't have the frequencies preloaded. You have to pull over to hit a repeater if you're going to a different location, unless you are just able to memorize menu trees. That's another added bonus with the 2980 is that it's just plain Jane. It's kind of like a dumb brute, you know. It's 80 watts, no cooling fan to generate noise. It's simple. You hit this button and it does that. Not a lot of frills on it. But what it does really well. With the dual banders and all the buttons, boy, they sure do look cool. But trying to navigate that while you're driving is, it's just, you know, not safe, nor is it fun. But the 2980, you know, you can put a frequency in and drop a tone in it, and just a little bit, because not a lot of menu trees there with it. So it just depends on what you want to do, but the way I see it, but somebody else might have something else to say about it.
Okay, I4 DOS. Got audio on this microphone now?
You do. You're good to go, Gary.
One battery died on me. I heard you saying something about repeaters. Getting into a repeater, if you can get in there full quieting, the least amount of wattage full quieting is what you should run. if you can get in there with a watt or 2 watts or 5 watts or whatever, and your full quieting, the repeater is going to retransmit your signal at whatever the repeater's output is. If you're in a situation where you have to run 50 watts to get into the repeater to where people can understand you, it's still going to retransmit your signal at whatever the repeater is, as far as that goes. So even though you're having to send 50 watts into it, it's not going to put out, but if it's 25-watt repeater, it's going to put out 25 watts. Simplex is a different animal. It is point-to-point, line of sight, so to speak. Well, I lost my train of thought there for a second. As far as the power goes there, it's the least amount of power that it takes to make a contact from point A to point B. If it takes you 80 watts, it takes you 80 watts. Then the, well, I can't think what the other thing Chad was talking about. The menu-driven radios. If you're going to run a dual band in your vehicle, go ahead and pre-program everything into memory. You got more memories than one. That way you can just use up and down buttons on your microphone, or you can reach over and twist the dial when it's in memory, and you can find them a lot faster. Trying to program a frequency in a tone, or if it's got two tones, you have to program in there, plus the shift and all this, if your radio doesn't do automatic shift. I'm with Chad. Go ahead and pre-program your radio. Get you one that's simple and makes it a lot easier on you. KI4DOS.
KI4DTY. Make sure I have this. And Chad, I guess, so Gary, I'm driving to Charleston every now and then, Charlotte, Asheville, and so I'm wanting to still be able to hit the Blue Ridge repeater. And that's why I was asking about the, should I switch my truck over to that Yaesu FT2980 that I have. I bought a TYT98, which is just 50 watts. And I get the whole simplex thing. I get the simplex is you're your own repeater, essentially. And so you're, whatever power you have, that's what's pushing it to the next person. So I do get that. I haven't actually got to use the dual band on my truck yet with the TYT that I bought. I tell you what, though, I went to Charleston, and I was trying to switch frequency, and I tell you what, that thing all but started smoking on me. I got completely locked out and everything. I could not get that stupid thing to let me do anything at all. Every time I would hit a button, it'd start squawking at me.
TYT, Daniel.
Yeah, I bought that TYT 9800, which is supposed to be kind of the copycat of the Yaesu FT 8900.
Okay. Well, let me throw this at you for a second. Let me collect my thoughts here just for a second, figure out how I'll word this. You just joined the Thermal Belt Club, and in December we're going to have our presentation and training on the wide area repeater network system. Now, I have just started to study this. I from what I am reading from the website, there's another linked repeater system in the state of South Carolina called I'll come back to the name of it in a minute. From what I'm reading on the website, there are 18 different nodes or 8, 17 different repeaters across the state of South Carolina that is linked in this system. It's called SC Heart, H-E-A-R-T. Now, from what I'm reading, I want to physically talk with someone first, but what I'm reading is that you can hit one of those access nodes. One of them is in Anderson. And you push your DTMF code on your repeater. And you, according to what I'm reading, you can access, you can use the Anderson repeater to access whatever repeater you want to hit across the state of South Carolina. In other words, you can be in Anderson, input a DTMF code, and bounce through repeaters all the way to Charleston and stay and use, you understand what I'm saying, you can use VHF and UHF to move all the way across the state. But like I said, I just have started to learn. From what I'm reading, that's the way it sounds. But if you think about that for a minute, that's pretty neat. Now, Gary may know more about SC Heart. But I have just started to learn. But that may be another option for you, too.
Gary? Why? Let me make sure I have this. Dang, if I could do that, that'd be great. I guess, you know, my thing was, is, you know, it's, you know, like when I went down to Charleston, I just wanted to kind of hear and just kind of keep up to date. But also, I was coming back home and late Saturday night, it was like, you know, whatever, 1 o'clock in the morning, and it would have been, you know, cool to have talked to someone to kind of get me down the road a little ways at least. And but I couldn't, you know, I was doing the scan and everything else. I couldn't find anybody or didn't know what channels to even really truly listen to that were active. And it would have been nice just to be able to reach the repeater, you know, here at Caesar's Head. Granted, I wasn't expecting from, you know, in Charleston to be able to hit it. But, you know, as I got closer, you know, I kind of, it would have been nice to have, be able to reach it some.
Are you near your computer?
Copy.
Go to the Google machine and type in scheart.us. That's Sierra Charlie Hotel Echo Alpha Romeo Tango.us. And it will take you to the SC Heart webpage. Let me know when you're there.
SC, South Carolina. Heart, like actual heart, H-E-A-R-T?
SC, Sierra Charlie, heart, as in a human heart. One word. Okay, if you're at the home page, you look across the top, you'll see home, calendar, analog, digital, about us, all that. You see that? Down arrow for analog, and go down to repeater frequencies, PO tone, and node. There's 32, if my math is correct, 32, I guess, I'm not good at math, but there's a lot of repeaters there that are part of the SC Heart program. So, the node number will be the DTMF code number. So, in other words, if you are in Columbia, you're nearest node 32. But let's say you want to talk to Paris Mountain, which is node 37. Well, that's probably a little bit far to talk from Columbia on VHF or UHF. You can hit the Columbia repeater and obviously make sure nobody's on it, and type in 37 star, and you can link that repeater to the green. Greenville Paris Mountain repeater. So you can be in Columbia and talk with people in upstate. What I am reading is correct. Now, like I said, I want to verify that with an actual person. But go back up to analog and hit the drop-down menu and click on using the IRLP system. Instructions are there on how to do it. I haven't tried this. Well, actually, I have done it. I have talked with a station in Goose Creek from my home here. Now, that was 8 months ago, but I have physically done it. And according to what I'm reading here, that is how you do it. And that, if that information is correct, the only issue I have with this is if you look at the date up at the top, it says posted March 9th, 2012. Now, that was a long time ago. But, like I said, 8 months ago, I've done this. It lists all the instructions there on what to do. So, if this information is correct, if it's correct, you've got that. You, as an operator, can link a repeater to another repeater. But there's some responsibilities that come with that. When you're done, you have to close that link, and the instructions are there. Now, one other thing I'll add. Let me let this repeater drop. If you'll click on calendar, you will see that. Let me make sure you're there with me.
Yep, I'm there with you.
If you'll look at the calendar, you'll see that there are scheduled nets on these repeaters, and it's part of the South Carolina Emergency Response System. And you can listen in to these nets, and I have listened to them a couple of times, and what happens is, I think the last time I listened was, several months ago, was up at the deer camp, and they talk from hospital to hospital, and they report, hey, you got X amount of patients with X amount of beds. We need 4 respirators. And then Orangeburg reports in and says, okay, well, we've got 4 extra respirators. You can, and they'll work it out that way. Like I said, this is what I'm reading. What is reading may be different than what is factual. Like I said, I've done it one time months ago and did not understand that that's what I was doing, but did it. But I would like to reserve the right to say, hey, I want to physically talk with the guy who wrote this article because his call sign is in there. And one other thing, let me let this drop. Having free Zoom training on how all this works. So you can, log into the Zoom meeting under home, and you can log in for that training. It's free training to see kind of how it works. But I don't know enough about it right now to say that that's factual. I can just tell you that what I'm reading is that's pretty interesting, pretty interesting.
DOS, Daniel, if you hear K9OH, Mr. Billy, he's lives down in Anderson now. He used to live in Columbia, and if memory serves, and I may be wrong, but I think the 145.47 up on Caesar's head is linked with those SC Hearts repeaters. Billy can tell you a whole bunch about it because he's been involved with it for a long time.
See, that came down to the hunting camp?
That was in 4WHM. Billy K90H. I think that's right, Gary. He is big into the Warren's Wide Area Repeater Network. But basically, this system is allowed. It allows UHF and VHF traffic all the way across the state. But being a licensed operator at certain times with certain responsibilities, I'm pretty sure you have access to do that. But like I said, this is what I'm reading. I need to talk with Billy about that. But I will be adding that to the thermal belt training after we get through this Warren's link to network and how that works. But I'll get all the information and compile it. But Gary can tell you better how to, I guess you'll have to plan your trip. If you know you're going to Charleston, then pre-program your radio and do that. Let me let this drop. And it's to learn the scan function on the radio. But then again, if you're scanning for somebody talking, you're still going to have to put a PO tone in it, unless the radio scans for PO tones. But it'll just tell you the PO tone, and you'll have to program it in. So my suggestion is, what I would do is keep the full 40, the dual bander, in the vehicle. But if you know you're going to be traveling to Charleston, just go ahead and put your frequencies in. And that way, like Gary says, you hit the down button and you move from repeater to repeater to repeater all the way to your destination. That's the best, that's the best way to do it, the way I'm seeing it. KO4NUE.
KI4DTY. Yeah, I guess that helps me a lot. That's why I was kind of wanting to pick your brain about if you thought that was a smart move just to keep what I have in there, or if maybe I should switch it out. But I get, let me make sure I have this saying, as far as, you know, you and Chris putting the 2980s in. And if it was something that, like, I'm on farmland and stuff like that, yeah, I would get, like, you know, it would be wiser to do 2980 since I need the power. I guess I was wondering if I needed that extra power to hit the repeater to kind of give me, allow me to get farther away before I lose it, or what. But I put the dual bander in because I wanted to be able to use, like, a handy with it and use, you know, the truck radio as a repeater if I needed it for, you know, hikes and trails and stuff.
See, as a crossman repeater, is that what you're saying?
Affirmative, it is.
My personal preference, and I want to emphasize my personal preference, is that dual bander with crossband repeat capabilities, just leave that in the truck because that's pretty doggone valuable. But like I said, with Simplex on the 2980, why don't you, Daniel, consider this? Why don't you consider putting the 2980 in the ham shack, put it beside the Yaesu, and when you get your, you know, get your general and you move to HF, you just keep the Yaesu set up for HF because it's really good at doing HF stuff. And then use the 2980 to do your 2 meter net check-ins there in the house. That's pretty common, I think. Isn't that right, Gary?
Yeah, that's pretty well right. Daniel, this repeater, the 6-1 repeater, has got a pretty good footprint. It's not as big as the 145-19, the Mount Mitchell machine. But you can keep this repeater down over Newberry or just a little bit below Newberry, which is a good long ways from the repeater site. I have had check-ins on the net from Charleston and James Island and John's Island and a couple other different places down in and around Charleston. But the people were on beams, and I don't know how much power they were running. But, of course, the propagation was kind of strange, tropospheric ducting that affects UHF and VHF. I've had people check in from Alabama on certain occasions. But that's, well, I used to, when I was working, every once in a while I would talk to Charleston from my mobile, going through the Caesar's Head repeater, the 6-1 machine. And the guys down there in Charleston were had their beams, and they were pointed this way, and they just happened to have that this frequency programmed in. And there again, I don't know what kind of power they were running or whatnot, but you can get it to this repeater pretty solid. It's kind of when you get into rolling hills down below Clinton, between Clinton and Newberry, you'll get some picket fencing going on there. You can run it up about King's Mountain, and then it gets a little spotty. And then you can keep this repeater pretty much all the way into Charlotte. In certain spots, you can get into the repeater with no problem. Other spots, you can't even hear it. You can't hit it or anything else. Going down into Georgia, down below Commerce, down to just about Gainesville. I have hit the repeater from Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, with my mobile. So it's got a pretty large footprint. The 145-19, of course, is a lot higher than this repeater is. I don't know how far down you can actually keep the Mount Mitchell machine. Never really tried. I was in Winsboro, radio out. I was in Winsboro with a 19-inch antenna on my truck and was talking to fellas on the 145-19 machine, but it's a lot higher, and it's, there again, you're talking about line of sight. And if your signal can see the repeater antenna, you can keep it a long ways. But the crossband repeat is good, especially, like you said, if you're going out hiking or something, you can put your leave your radio on in your truck or your car, whatever it's in, and take your HT with you on crossband, and that way you can keep in touch with people that way. That's a good feature. But as far as the higher power radios, like I said, whatever it takes to get into the repeater is what you have to run. If you need to run 80 watts, run 80 watts. But I don't like to tax my transceivers that much. I run the power a little bit lower than that because I don't want to have to replace the finals in it because I got them too hot and this sort of thing. But I hope that helps you out a little bit, and I'll let y'all carry on. I'm going to jump out of here and go get me something to drink and sit down and visit with the wife for a few minutes. I'll say 73 to the group, KI4DTY and KO4NUE, KI4DOS.
Thank you, Gary, for your help. 73, I hope you have a great night. And, yeah, you called it like when I was driving down to Charleston, right at Clinton is where I was losing the repeater. And same for Kings Mountain. But anyway, thank you so much for your help.
This is the one that's freeze anyway. So I got one of those TYTs like he's talking about. That coolant fan on the back ain't worth a hoot. It ain't cooling nothing. Because the output transistors are on the circuit board itself down in the radio. And it's just It ain't doing no curling. It says if you just see on a bunch of stuff on that YouTube, don't run it on 50 watts. It'll burn it up, and they don't have anybody to fix those things either because they can't get parts. And another thing about getting on the crossband and all, get on that CERT, C-E-R-T, that program for your computer, and you can hook to your radio, and it just makes it so much easier to program it because you can download different people's list from one place to another. It might have 10 repeaters on it. You can download it, stick it in yours, get all the frequency and everything you need, and do that. And you can also open it, bring up more channels too, get in there. And I can tell you how to do that. Shoot to the website that knows how to do it. It'll tell you.
So that I work with Mac, so I don't have a PC. Will that CERT program work with a Mac?
I'm there now.
Thank you very much for that recommendation.
Yeah, I hate to kind of break your bubble on that 50 watt deal, but I mean, I hadn't run my own 50 watt about 2 times, and I didn't do it for about maybe 30 seconds at best, and everything worked, so I don't know how long it takes to overheat, or it doesn't really say, but if you're on YouTube, look at everything you can on YouTube, like that radio.
Yeah, I did look at it before I bought it, but I didn't realize that, and I probably do run it at 50 watt quite often. There's this little dead hole over here on Wade Hampton near my house, and even though I'm not far from the repeater, when I drop into that little hole, nobody can hardly hear me, and the road does not dip that low, so I don't know what the deal is.
No telling, but if you want to get more output, just get you a linear to put in there, you know, and just run the linear at about 5 watts in it, and might output you maybe 80-100 watts. That won't burn up your radio at all, then.
I'm so new to ham in general. I'm not sure what you mean by the linear.
Don't first talk on here. You tell them all about that.
For DTYKO4NUE. So, Daniel, I got a question for you. So, what has happened in that vehicle that has caused you to start to question changing the radios out? I'm going to speculate here for a second. Number one, it's not easy to migrate to or find a frequency to talk on. Or number two, you hit a button and the radio went crazy while you're driving, and it was hard to figure out how to get it back on frequency. So maybe you just shut it off because you're focusing on driving. Am I pretty close?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a combination of things. I think the main... I don't want to sound like I hate the radio. The radio seems overall like a really good radio. And overall, I've been happy with it. I guess where I'm not been terribly happy is I feel like I'm not able to get that far out of town before I lose the repeater. It seems complicated to program. And I don't want to have to go to YouTube every time I want to program this stupid thing.
That's what I'm thinking here. So let me word this way. Let me make sure I got it. When you have a radio in the vehicle, it's very important to know how to operate the radio. And I'm not saying this offensively because I am guilty of this too and have learned this lesson the hard way. So the way you prevent that, because obviously when you're driving and if you have to stop the vehicle to figure out the radio, let me word it like this. Number one, when you are moving in a vehicle and you want to hit your repeaters all over the state from here to there, and you're on a frequency that you know you can talk, that you can talk on, lock the VFO. There should be a button somewhere on the radio where you can lock the VFO, which means it doesn't matter what button you push. If you sit on the mic and you inadvertently hit this button and the radio does there and you can't figure out how to go get it, lock it. So that no matter what you do to the radio, the only thing you can do is hit the push to talk button, and that's it. And what that does is that prevents you from fiddle fingering those small buttons, because I've got big fingers, and small buttons and big fingers don't work well. So once you're on frequency, lock it. That's number one. Let me let this drop.